John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline is Danny Kelly of The Ringer. And so, Danny, I mean, I don't know. The thing that's going to be so strange about Week 15 in the National Football League is going to be continued elimination week. I mean, this is the earliest that 12 teams have been eliminated now, so there's only 20 eligible for the playoffs, and there could be as many as five more wiped out in Week 15, you know, which only would leave 15 teams competing for playoff spots for in the final 2 weeks. I don't think I've ever seen one like this.
Yeah, do you think it speaks to the parity in the league right now being kind of weak? Like there's some good, there's like a handful of really good teams and then a lot of bad teams. Do you think that's kind of the case this season?
Yes, and I think it's going to be one that could get worse. Here's the reason why, and see if you agree with any of this. I could be completely wrong. You know, it doesn't start with the compensatory pick system, but the compensatory pick system has come in, and you know, basically, you know, teams want to protect their draft choices, and so if they lose a free agent, they're not going to bid. So that takes away 1/3 of the bidders. Okay, that's problem number one. Secondly, it gets better players available when you get to the May, when there's no unrestricted free agency. I mean, the Seahawks ended up getting a couple starters out of it, waiting and say the New England Patriots and all that. Then, of course, you know, the trades, there's more trades that are happening. And so now the bad teams, you know, almost have to overpay in free agency and look bad in doing it, because look at all the moves the Jets made and they stink. You look at Jacksonville, Nick Foles and the moves they make and they stink. It's like the bad teams now have a tougher time of getting better, and that's not good.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I'm kind of just thinking about when you're kind of describing all those different variables is the middle class in the NFL right now, in terms of contract size, has been pretty much phased out. I mean, there's teams that are paying big name stars and then like rolling with a bunch of first contract players. And I think it hurts teams' ability to build depth and kind of build out basically the rest of their roster after the top guys in free agency. So I think just overall the quality and the depth of a lot of teams has been suffering because of that.
No, I would agree. And I think that is a big factor in you know, where a lot of these things are going. And then the problem that you also look at is that the league keeps getting younger. And the other aspect is, you know, okay, so bad teams do two things they shouldn't, is a big build big on free agency and then fire the coach. Because now what happens, I mean, and you look at the eight coaching hires, I mean, the only two right now that you could say would be successful would be Bruce Arians in Tampa and certainly Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. Everybody else has gone to their teams and made them worse.
Yeah, there's been an incredible amount of coaching turnover. I feel like I've noticed that the last few seasons, there's just, you barely ever see offensive coordinators last with teams more than a few years. And that can, I think, with so much turnover, that can definitely affect the quality kind of the teams. I think you nailed it, too, with the youth movement in the NFL. And the other thing this year that's been, I think, a big factor in kind of separating the haves and have-nots is there's just been a good amount of quarterback injuries this season and teams having to deal with that. I mean, look at what happened in Carolina. They probably would have been somewhere near a playoff squad if Cam Newton hadn't been hurt, and you kind of see it all over the league now with injuries and things like that. Most teams can't kind of get through that. We saw the Saints get through that, but I think that's a rarity.
Well, let's now look at the elite teams and seeing what's going to happen, because now injuries are going to play a big role in so much of this. You know, New Orleans, you know, they had to play against San Francisco, had a terrible game on defense, down two linebackers, safeties over the top did not play well, and now they lose two starters on the defensive line, two former first-round picks, Sheldon Rankins for the season and Marcus Davenport. How now vulnerable are they?
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I think that's one thing that we're going to be probably talking about down the stretch. It kind of puts the Saints back into the same position they've been over the last 2 years, where they're relying on Cameron Jordan to do just so much for that pass rush. And I think it's going to put the onus on the offense to kind of carry the team going forward. And maybe there'll be in more shootouts like we saw against San Francisco, because, you know, for the good part of the season, San Francisco, or I should say New Orleans, was one of the more balanced teams in the NFL. I think that's what made them so strong. It's what allowed them to get through that section of the season without Drew Brees. And I'm guessing we're going to go back to more of the Saints I guess, identity where their offense carries them. They win in shootouts, and they kind of rely on Drew Brees to carry the day because, like you said, they've lost so many key players on defense. It's just going to be hard for them to keep playing at that level.
Yeah. How? What do you look at as far as San Francisco and now what they're going to be going through? Because, you know, that's the interesting thing. Best game of the year, 48-46, but so much damage in that game. You know, Weston Richburg goes on injured reserve. He's out for the season. Richard Sherman gets a hamstring. You know, got D Ford with a hamstring. They're both going to miss a couple weeks, and they couldn't miss it all the way through the Seattle game.
Yeah, the Richburg injury is going to be really interesting to see how much that affects their run game, because in the wide zone offense that Shanahan runs, the center position is very important. Those guys are asked to kind of, you know, get out in space, reach block against guys where they're going across their face and trying to reach block guys, and that's just a very key variable in that wide zone scheme. And so, you know, maybe that means they have to rely on Jimmy Garoppolo more down the stretch instead of really just, you know, making the run game the foundation of their offense, and that could affect things. Garoppolo's been playing really, really well, but over the last 4 weeks at least. But, you know, that's just putting a lot of pressure on him to kind of carry them going forward. And so, to me, that's a huge injury to monitor. And then on defense, like you said, Sherman and Deep Four, two key cogs in that defense. And we saw them kind of get picked apart by the Saints last week. And so, just like the Saints, you know, the 49ers may have to rely on their offense a little bit more down the stretch. And, you know, we're seeing the injury attrition really kind of be a factor that, like, you know, with the last few weeks of the season coming up.
Yeah, no doubt. What's your thoughts on the Rams? Are the Rams back to being the Rams?
That's such a good question. I mean, on one hand, you know, I don't think you can read too much into divisional games. It's just division games tend to be very weird. These teams know each other really well. They know how to kind of exploit each other's weaknesses and introduce new things that'll kind of like throw the other team off. But at the same time, they really did look like the Rams of the last two seasons in that game against Seattle. You know, they were finding ways to get guys open in space. Jared Goff played really well. You know, even Todd Gurley's come on strong. So to me, they really, really did look exactly like the team that we saw, you know, go to the Super Bowl last year, and then the team before the year before that, where they just were unstoppable. And so it's definitely, I think maybe this, that was something they, where they kind of get over the hump. We'll see this week against Dallas, but yeah, they definitely were able to do what they wanted to do on offense. They ran a lot more 12 personnel, which was an interesting kind of departure from, you know, last few seasons. So they're doing it in slightly different ways schematically, but yeah, if that was sort of like a turning point for them, that makes things very, very interesting going down the stretch, because they could sneak into the playoffs.
No question. Now, what about Seattle? Clearly, I mean, they just need one win to make the playoffs. Defense took a step back. Where do you look at them right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense definitely has kind of taken a step back after playing really well for a stretch. Injuries have played a part in that, clearly. And, you know, I think I don't exactly know how they fix their pass rush going forward, because Ziggy Ansah has been banged up. Jadeveon Clowney's battling a hernia thing right now. Maybe they have to do more blitzing going forward, or kind of figure out schematic ways to manufacture a pass rush, because it just hasn't really been there for the last few weeks. And then offensively, I mean, I wouldn't say I blame Russell Wilson for the Rams loss, but I think the Seahawks, just because they're not as balanced as some of the other teams that are kind of in their tier, they just need Wilson to play a little bit sharper. And, you know, obviously his receivers were dropping passes in key moments last week, and, you know, you can't put everything on Wilson, but overall I just think the offense and Wilson in particular need to be a little bit sharper down the stretch if the Seahawks are going to be able to compete with some of these much more balanced teams in the NFC.
Yeah. So what do you see right now as far as the pass rush and what needs to come out of that?
Well, I'd like to see a little bit more from, like, Jaron Reed, you know, Puna Ford. It's been a little bit quiet on the interior, I feel like, you know, over the last few games. And obviously, Jadeveon Clowney is battling through something. The one thing I was encouraged with the last couple of weeks is Shaquem Griffin has been kind of like an energy, like, boost for that defense. What they've been able to do with him kind of as a pass rusher and movable chess piece on that defense, I'd like to see a little bit more of that. I think he provides them something like a speed element to their pass rush that they haven't really had this year. So I think that's going to be a big thing. And the other thing is, with Diggs back there, the acquisition of Diggs' safety has been, I think, big for them too, and what they've been able to do up front, like I said, maybe they can blitz a little bit more, get a little more creative because they trust him in the back end of the field to kind of do that Earl Thomas thing where he's ranging around and taking away passes to the middle of the field. He's just been a big boost to them, I think. And so he could be a big factor going forward in their pass rush, even though he's not exactly, you know, doing the pass rushing himself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you have on the Ringer that we can follow?
What do I have? I just did an article today about the players, the upcoming free agents that have made themselves the most money this season. There's actually a really, really deep class of free agents, especially pass rushers, going into the next season. So pretty excited about what happens in the free agent market over the offseason.
Okay, well, that'll be great. And, of course, that's Danny Kelly of The Ringer. Thanks for joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline.
Thanks, John.
Coming up next, we're going to get the grade book out with the report card. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And, of course, the report card, we get out there every day. We look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We'll take the anecdotes. We'll take the stories. We'll take the voices. We'll take social media. We'll do all those different things and attach a grade to us. Helping it out is, but boy, howdy. And, boy, I just wanted you to give a grade right now on Dave Wyman's feel, you know, hearing Philip Rivers get into the face of one of the his opponents and giving almost a touchdown call. And, you know, the player just shaking his head and saying, don't do that. And, of course, I mean, he would just put him down if he had the opportunity and get the penalty. Kind of grade his aggressiveness.
I'd like to see it. I'd really like to see Dave Wyman knock somebody out after the play. I think it'd be really interesting and entertaining to watch. I think that this is Philip Rivers is being a little bit petty. And if by a little bit, I mean a lot bit petty. His team is terrible this year, and he has not been great, and his career is almost over. I think it's strange that he is crowing at any point in time during the season, given how it's gone and his lack of contribution to their success.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you know, it looks like there's one story out there that they very well may start to look to maybe somebody like a Cam Newton next year if they don't go back to Philip Rivers. So very interesting. What do we have, Curtis?
Well, let's start off with the biggest free agent deal ever signed by a pitcher in Major League history. That'd be Gerrit Cole, former Astro, signing with the New York Yankees late last night. 9 years, $324 million. He has an opt-out clause after the fifth year of his contract. How are we grading the Yankees backing up the Brinks truck for the ace righty?
You have to give it an A. I mean, you know, because, in fact, I'll give an A and I'll give another D right now to the Boston Red Sox because, you know, the Yankees try to go out there and get better. And what we've seen in last year, the Red Sox haven't. And so I'm going to give an A because I think you get one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, he was just aces last year. I mean, what was it? How great he was since May 22nd. I mean, just amazing to see what a great pitcher he is. And you add a great pitcher and they needed pitching help. You know, CC Sabathia is pretty well done. You know, they needed a move like this.
10 years ago, when there wasn't this luxury tax limit that's basically become a salary cap in baseball, I would have given this an F and a big old vomit sign right on the middle of it. But the fact that the salary cap essentially is in place now with the luxury tax and the stiff penalties, and now they still want to go out and identify, we've got a great base of talent. What we want is the elite level elite talent at the most important position, and we're going to pay whatever it costs to get it. I'm going to give him an A for that too, John. I think you're absolutely right. That team has identified that their core level of talent is good enough to win a championship, and everything they look to add from this point on is trying to figure out how they can go that extra step and go beyond what other teams are willing to do. They built themselves up to the point where they can make this happen, and good on them for doing it. I hope it inspires other great teams in baseball to go spend, and I hope that we can get rid of this luxury tax situation so we can get actual good players getting paid good money to be on good teams, and we can get back to focusing on creating the best team possible instead of trying to move all these chess pieces to see how you could best use your resources to potentially give you a shot in 5 years.
And what's great about this is that the best free agents in baseball aren't waiting around till mid-March to sign like they did a year ago with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. I think we're all glad to see the biggest names, Steven Strasburg re-signing with the Nationals, Gerrit Cole yesterday, and it sounds like Anthony Rendon's market is picking up, whether that be with, I think it's the Angels and Rangers are two teams very much on his trail right now.
So, John, the best thing that could happen in this situation is that Gerrit Cole is amazing next year, and the Yankees just blow everyone away because the Mariners are going to be competing next year for a championship. And then he's a disaster from that point forward and hamstrings that organization just when the Mariners start to get good. Now, that would be great.
Yeah, if the Mariners can get good, that's going to be the big question right now. I mean, because it's going to be good. I'm glad that they're not going to be trading Mitch Haniger from what they're saying.
Ooh, I'm not so sure about that, John. I think you're probably right, but I'm not so sure.
No, I know. You got to. I mean, this is Jerry DePoto, and if he gets the right offer, he'll do it.
Also on the report card today, we stick in New York. There was the story yesterday we talked about Le'Veon Bell being spotted at a bowling alley after being ruled out Sunday with the flu. Well, Bell spoke to reporters yesterday and told us how his evening went.
The bigger surprise, I rolled 251 off the flu. That's the bigger surprise.
Was that career high game?
That's my career high. 251? 251.
What was the career high before that?
238.
238?
Yeah, 251.
No 7-10 splits.
No, thank goodness. No.
So despite his sickened condition, Le'Veon Bell was able to bowl a 251 with the flu. How are we grading Bell's night out?
I'm going to give it a D- because, again, it was stupid. I mean, first off, you were away from your teammates. I know that there was no mandate or anything else. But, I mean, you know, it's like he wasn't healthy enough to play, but he's healthy enough to bowl a 251. I mean, give me a break. I mean, that's just absolutely awful. I mean, here's a $14 million player who's underachieved. I know you can blame that on the lack of calls that they've given to him, all that stuff. But again, it's like, you know, he cares more about his bowling and getting out than he cared about his teammates. Bad grade.
Yeah, this is tough. I personally like his coach's response later. I don't know if we'll get to that later on the report card because that was great. But I think ultimately this guy is such a has-been for the Jets already. It's over. It's already over. And so basically anything that happens to him is the same as anything that would happen to a player who's on IR to me. Like they're not trying to compete this year. He's not going to be on their team next year. And he's not a part of their core anymore. And this kind of stuff proves it. So that's bad news, but amazing news for him. I'll give him an A for a 251. That's a great bowling score. I mean, 300 is the best you can get. That's like three open frames maybe. That's really impressive.
John, your wife is an award-winning bowling reporter,
yep,
correct?
In the Hall of Fame.
How do you think she would grade Le'Veon Bell's 251?
I'll probably give it an A because, again, it's like 251. I mean, you know, 251 and you're ill. I mean, so you're not at your best condition and you get a 251. I think she'd give it a very good grade.
John, what was your best score in bowling?
I think I had like a 160 or something like that
okay.
once.
It's pretty good. It's not bad.
We'll
not
have to
bad.
Get out there sometime. We'll get that score down up a little bit.
Adam Gase also sort of gave an explanation as to why Le'Veon Bell was out late. Here is what he had to say about keeping Bell away from the team.
Because we didn't want him coming to the hotel or locker room when he was still contagious. That wasn't his fault that we said that he was still contagious. I mean, that's what the doctors told him. I'd rather him not be. I'd rather be him at home just getting better. But that'll be a conversation we have. I mean, we have a late start today, so I'll have a chance to talk with him.
So you won't discipline him or anything?
What am I going to discipline him for? I can't tell him you have to stay in your house.
So how are we grading Adam Gase sort of giving his explanation as to why Le'Veon Bell might be out?
You got to give it an F. I mean, because that's ridiculous. It's like, okay, you're going to endorse the fact that your player just decides, hey, I'm not healthy, but I'm going to go out and bowl. I'm going to be with my guys and all that stuff. Be with a whole group of people. Absolutely horrible.
Man.
I mean, that's an F.
You're going to give it an F?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I really like this response. Adam Gase having a little bit of humor with the situation that could just be all bad. And I like the end of it. What, when tell him he has to stay in his house? Like, if he's telling the truth, which is probably not, that they just wanted him to stay away from the team because he was quote-unquote sick, which I don't buy in the first place. I think they're like, you know what, we're tired of this excuses. We don't have to deal with this headache. Here's a reason for you not to be here. Don't come. I would just say that... It was fun. It was very fun that Adam Gase did this, and kudos to him. A+ for the answer to me. I think that's great. Adding some levity to the situation.
Bad deal. Bad, bad deal.
That's going to do it for the report card, John.
Okay, and coming back next, we're going to take your text questions. You can text us at 710-710. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. All right, it is now time to take your text questions. Let's get to them, Curtis.
From the 253, they want to know Is Philip Rivers a Hall of Famer? He has the regular season stats, but does he have enough postseason success?
Probably not. I mean, I think it could leave him a little bit short because, I mean, for example, it's like, remember, you know, it's going to be roughly at the same time. We have to make judgments on Eli Manning and him, you know, because if this is going to be the last year for both 5 years from now. And so I think it's going to take a little bit of time. And, you know, the numbers are there. There's no question about it. The success is taken away a little bit. I think it's going to take him a couple years, but ultimately I think both Eli and Philip will get into the Hall of Fame.
From the 253, they say, John, do you think the Seahawks 49ers Week 17 game gets flexed to Sunday Night Football?
I do, yeah, because it's going to have meaning. And, you know, and particularly to really, because there's not going to be a lot of drama about who's making it and who's not. I mean, think about this by this weekend. I mean, you may only have 15 teams competing for 12 spots, and you're going to have as many as 7 or 8 already in. And so that makes it very difficult to see if you can get the right matchup, because really, I mean, what's going to be great is that these next 2 weeks aren't great as far as some of the matchups. There's some good ones and some not so good ones. I mean, Tennessee, Houston going twice in the last 2 weeks. But what I think that you're looking at is, okay, you're talking about, you know, a possible 12-13 win season, how the division's going to go. You know, a lot of the divisions are already going to be decided. So I think that, yeah, it's going to get flexed.
From the 206, with Ed Dixon still under contract for next season, do you anticipate him being back with the Seahawks?
I'd say no, because now, you know, he's 2 years in, he's missed a lot of games, and I think they'll go a different direction. They probably can use the cap room. So, no, I think they're going to move on from Ed.
From the 425, with Robert Kraft and Roger Goodell meeting for an hour today, when do you anticipate a ruling on the latest Spygate video?
I would have to think by Friday. I mean, you know how they have the news dump Fridays where you know, they'll take some negative news and put it out there and, you know, make a decision. But they were going to make a fast decision. And, of course, I mean, it's not like you can have a big investigation. I mean, you got 8 minutes of tape that basically says, okay, here's what he's been – here's the Bengals sidelines. You're not going to get an explanation that's going to, you know, counter to anything. So I think in the end it'll be done by Friday.
From the 425, they asked the question, do you see the Panthers taking their foot off the gas pedal when it comes to Christian McCaffrey, since they're out of the playoff picture?
Not on Christian. I think they're going to keep, you know, going with him as best they could, because, again, I think that you know, he's done such a good job overall. But, no, I think in the end it's going to be you know, pretty – they'll give him, because, again, you know, they're going to try to see if they can get a win, because just to, you know, calm things around. And if they can't, then I think it'll be, you know, that much more difficult. So I think right now they're going to give him as much chance as they can and get as many yards as he can.
509 wants to know, how would you grade Bobby Wagner's season?
Oh, it's an A+. I mean, he's just absolutely sensational in how well he plays. I think that you know, all is good in that regard. So no, I give him an A+.
From the 360, how serious will Richard Sherman's injury be for the 49ers?
Very serious, because it's a second-degree hamstring, and that means he's going to miss a couple weeks. Now, you know he's going to try like crazy to try to play, if necessary, in that final game, but this is concerning because, again, he's going to lose, you know, some flexibility, some speed, all those different things. You know, they may try to attack him a little bit more than they would. This is a significant injury, but, again, not one that's going to knock him out for the playoffs. But it is going to affect them for the last 3 weeks of the season.
425 wants to know, between the Saints, Seahawks, and 49ers, which of those three teams do you see getting home field advantage throughout the postseason?
I mean, you know, I think right now what I'm kind of wondering about, because, again, you know, I was kind of skeptical on whether the Seahawks would beat the Rams. I just, there was something in the back of my mind that says it. Now we even see why. But I'm wondering, the way the Rams are going, and if they can, you know, let's say they beat Dallas. And I think with the injuries there for the 49ers, the Rams can cause a problem. If that's going to be the case, Seattle then can, I think, you know, get the bye. And, of course, now you worry about New Orleans to a small degree, because, you know, even though they've clinched the division, they're down 2 defensive linemen and 2 linebackers. And so they're a little bit more vulnerable. So I think, you know, I don't think they're going to get the number 1 seed. And, again, you still have to worry about Green Bay. But I think right now they can get a number 2 seed.
The 206 wants to know, how serious is Lamar Jackson's quad injury?
I think he's going to play. I mean, it's you know, it's worrisome, but I think that he's going to battle through it and do the best he can. So I don't think it's going to keep him from playing.
The 360 wants to know, how do you see Adam Thielen bouncing back from his injury?
I think it's going to take him a little bit of time to get back up to speed because he's missed so much time, and there's no guarantee he's going to play this week. We haven't got, the injury report isn't out yet, but that's a long time he's been out, and you have to think he's going to be affected.
From the 425, they want to know, do you see Jameis Winston returning to Tampa Bay in 2020?
I'm starting to think no, because even though he's putting up 28 points a game, and maybe it's a 50-50 thing. I mean, I go different every week, but I think that they probably want to go a little bit cheaper at the quarterback position, because the one thing is, and that's where I give Bruce Arians some credit, because I think he's turned the season around. He's making it respectable. I didn't think they were a playoff team this year. But the one thing is, what you have to look at is that the whole body of work for Jameis. He puts up the good numbers. He's the worst as far as turnovers and all that stuff since coming into the league. And it's like, can you win with Jameis Winston? And right now, he's proven that they can't.
Troy Aikman earlier yesterday admitted that he sees himself as a GM in the future. How do you think he would be as a general manager, John?
I think he can be okay. I mean, I feel a little bit better if he'd do like John Elway and get involved with Arena League teams are no longer there, but to try to do it. But, hey, you see success right now with John Lynch. I think you can see success with Troy Aikman.
From the, let's go with the 425, they want to know, how far do you see the Chiefs making it in the AFC postseason?
I'd say right now that they have a decent chance to maybe get to the second round and maybe even a championship. I mean, that's a good football team. Now, again, I'm a little bit worried about Frank Clark, and if you hadn't heard the story, Frank is now visiting a specialist, stomach specialist, because he's lost 12 pounds with his illness, and it's not getting any better, and he's very weak. So, I still think it's a good team. And, hey, quarterback-driven league, they got Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, if you got Patrick Mahomes on your team, you are in every single week. There is very little that the Chiefs go up against where they don't have a shot, especially with Mahomes backing him or in their under center right there.
Right.
From the 206, they want to know, does Russell Wilson have any chance of leapfrogging Lamar Jackson in the MVP race?
Well, he's got 3 weeks. I mean, there's no chance. I mean, he's sitting in the number two hole. It's just that Lamar has opened up such a big gap, it's going to be hard to catch up. And if Lamar finishes healthy, I think he wins. So I think right now you're looking at number two, not number one.
Let's see here. From the 206, they want to know, John, what do you make of Major League Baseball today coming out and saying that the balls are not juiced, it's just a difference in seams?
Well, I mean, whatever it is, you can see something is different and it's helping hitting and not helping pitching. I mean, it's maybe not a juiced ball, but I guess if it's a seamed ball is, they've got to figure out something to fix the seams, because right now it's too much in favor of the hitters and too much in favor of bad baseball, because, it's like, okay, they either hit it or strike out. It's like, strike out, walk, home run. That's about it.
Yeah, just two outcomes. They're the three true outcomes. Walk, hit, strikeout. And we've never seen it at a higher rate than it is right now in baseball. Hopefully they can fix that and get more balls in play, because that's why people come to the game, right? You don't want to see a 1-0 game when you're at the stadium. And then finally from the 206, how serious are the injuries to Marcus Davenport as well as the other injury to Sheldon Rankins on the Saints defensive line?
Bad enough they're both going on IR. They're done. There's no chance, and that's going to kill that defensive line. And remember how good they are in stopping the run, how good they are with pass rush. I mean, now you can double up on Cameron Jordan. No, I think it's a bad, bad injury, but they're done for the year. So that's certainly as great of a – I mean, you talk about the team that lost the most on Sunday and in Week 14, there's no doubt it was the New Orleans Saints. They lose the game at home. And now they lose two of their better defensive players, along with the fact they've got injuries at linebacker. It's not good.
Hate to see it. That's it for text questions today,
okay,
John.
Okay, so now we come back and we get a chance to catch up on our daily dose of the Groz. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And it's time for our daily dose of the Groz. Dave Grosby joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. And National Football League owners meetings are on right now. It's actually one of those, it's more of a cap review than it is anything else, and a chance for the cap guys to find out where the money's going to go. But one of the things that they talked about, and they at least addressed it in a press conference, they're going to do an up and down review of officiating. And I don't know, if you were the commissioner, if you were the competition committee, what suggestions would you have?
Geez, John, that is a loaded question, man, because it's there's I mean, where do you begin with something like this? I'd start at the beginning, and I'd investigate why don't we have full-time officials? Should we have full-time officials? Should we have the off season, you know, to run guys through drills? Should we, you know, be able to, because they're full-time, set up more committees to go over stuff like this, so we don't have to have these yearly reviews, so we don't have to have three or four different rule changes every year that everyone is wondering about and wondering why they work and don't work, and the officials have trouble implementing sometimes. I mean, I think just in general, it would be more input from the officials themselves in the rule changes these guys are talking about, and maybe the way to do that is to make them full-time and have them work on this full-time during the off season.
But see, here's where the problem with that is. And again, I think, you know, they were moving in that direction and they have as many as 25. But what's going to happen now in the next couple of years is there going to be such big turnover because, you know, once the new CBA starts, you can have, you know, the 20-year guys all get out of it because they get a 1.5% bonus, you know, as opposed to if you get out in the next 2 years. So now you're replacing two dozen officials. And so you don't know if you're going to get in. And remember, the pool of officiating is diminishing in the country. I mean, you see,
that's you're making my point. That's the reason to do that, because you're going to be going through some change in officials. They need to be trained more. They need to have more input, more. They need to be working 24, well, not 24/7, but you know, during the entire full season. I mean, that's a great argument for making them full time, so it'd be easier to integrate new officials in than as you're losing the older officials.
But how do you know if the ones that you hire are going to be any good? Because if you're now
how do you know they're not? I mean, the best chance of doing that is by having the most access to them. Having a full year access to them would you be able to make better decisions on what guys are good and what guys aren't good. So I think it would help your decision making process, not hurt it.
Well, that's where I think they've got the dilemma, because now they've got to sort all through this and figure out, you know, the right way to do, because I think, you know, because I think it right now can only get worse and not better, because I think you can see with the younger crews, the younger referees, I mean, there's more mistakes coming out of those groups than even the more experienced ones. And, you know, so
that's why they need to be trained more. That's why they need to be doing this, immersed in this full time 12 months out of the year instead of just a part-time, quote-unquote, part-time job that they have right now. That would be my solution to it anyway, or at least that would be the approach that I would take.
But again,
see if it would work. But, you know, my way of thinking would be, if they're more involved, this is a full-time thing, they've got a chance to get ramped up quicker than if they don't.
Yeah, but my big concern is, you know, you can see how it is on the college and high school level. I mean, it's so thin right now because, you know, millennials, say what you want about them, you know, they're not going to, you know, take the $50 a game and, you know, start doing high school games and eventually building up 10 years to get into college and then
You're
get into that.
You're continuing to make my point for me, John. That's why the NFL needs to be much more proactive in training, understanding they're not going to get the same caliber of guys from the colleges and high schools. They need to spend twice, three times, four times the time they're spending right now on training guys to be NFL officials.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of the challenges.
We'll
but something has to be done, without question.
We'll see what they do.
Yeah, no question. So now, what do you see going on? I guess we switch a little bit to baseball. And,
sure.
Thought about
meetings
Garrett,
going on there, too.
Yeah, Garrett Cole getting the biggest deal, $324 million over 9 years. Following the Steven Strasburg re-signing with Washington, Yankees get a good one.
Well, they do, but, I mean, $34 million a year for a pitcher and paying them for 9 years, I mean, they're paying for 3 years, basically, and it's just a disparity in baseball wealth is always up for display at winter meetings, because you seemingly every year you hear guys talking about saying, geez, I didn't think the market would go up that high, but you know, for the top teams, there's no limit to it. So it's an absolutely ridiculous contract. I appreciate the Gerrit Cole's ability, and he should be a fine pitcher for him for a couple of years. But for 4 or 5 years, they're going to be paying $35 million for a guy who's on the back end of his career. But it does not matter if you're the Yankees. You can afford it. The guy you're getting right now, the guy you're getting today is spectacular. But, you look at other teams around the league and, you know, how many teams, there are maybe two or three teams that have the ability to compete at that kind of level for that kind of player. And that's ultimately too bad. But I mean, it's for the Yankees, it's a signing that makes sense, but it's not a good signing.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, the great part is at least if he's collecting after, say, years 5 and 6, I mean, at least he can get together with a party with Bobby Bonilla New York, because they're still paying Bobby Bonilla with the Mets.
Well, they're paying him for 25 years, but they're not paying him $34 million a year, no. John, I'll tell you that much.
That's a good
point. He's making, he's kind of set the market for certain pitchers and for certain teams that are in that market, but I'd say 75, 80, yeah, more than that. 80 to 90% of the teams aren't even in play for something like that.
No, that's true. So that's going to be one of the.
And it won't. I mean, this is like you say. Well, this is setting the market and showing the value. No, it's not. This is not setting the value. There are no other teams that are going to pay $30-35 million for a pitcher, except for the 4 or 5 that were in on Cole, and it may have been in on Strasburg. So, we'll see. Madison Bumgarner, maybe a pitcher like that, but for the vast middle class of baseball players and middle class down, the money is not going to be there.
What's your thoughts on how things are starting to shape up for the Mariners in year two of the step back?
Feels like it's going to be a big step back this year. Same as last year, not a step forward yet. I think they'd like it to be, but unless they're going to play the free agent game, they got young players that they're relying on. It's Scott Service is already talking about preaching patience, and I understand his point. I mean, if they're going to play young guys, it's going to take a while. So they're going to be a long ways away, John. And Jerry DePoto said he didn't expect them to be active, and they're not. I think the biggest question probably is what guys are writing and talking about now is whether or not they're going to keep Mitch Haniger as part of the future or not. I mean, he still has got a lot of the tools that they like. I think he can throw out last year and say if he's healthy, he's much more the guy that he showed 2 years ago. You've still got 3 years of arbitration control plus a year of contract control with him. So he can be a guy who can be a key guy for you when you get good. But it's very hard for me to see them being good next year unrealistic for people to expect that, I think.
Yeah, no question. I think that's going to be real.
But John, the irony is, I mean, they Jerry DePoto's admitted that they weren't nearly as good at the meetings, that they didn't expect to be as bad as they were last year. So no matter who you are, no matter what your circumstance is, there's always pressure to win. And I imagine DePoto and Service are feeling that to a degree this year. So we'll see if they make a play for some, there's going to be some bargains in free agency, a lot of bargains in free agency, and we'll see if they added a pitching staff, things like that, with some of those bargains.
Yeah, but I think the two of us, I think we were in the minority that didn't like the idea of the step back because, again, you have so many teams stepping back, and baseball still doesn't seem to be willing to even address that and stop that. I don't know if you can stop it, but you need to do something.
I don't think you can stop it either. I see how they're building for the future, and the way to do it, unfortunately, is with the Narvaez trade, is to grab extra draft picks if you possibly can, because unlike football, there's only certain numbers of certain draft picks you can actually trade in baseball. And the Mariners have kind of taken advantage of that a little bit and the international market as well. But you made the very good point that you've got a lot of teams doing it. And unfortunately, you've had teams doing it for longer than the Mariners have, including teams in their division like Texas, who figures to be a lot better. California lost out on Cole. They're going to make a big play for a couple of other guys this year. You've got a long way to go in the AL West.
Oh, yeah, no question. And it's going to be a long, long, tough season. And my guess is they're not going to get off to the great start that they did last year.
No, 13-2 would be, if they do that 2 years in a row, John, I'll eat my hat.
Yeah, they'll be eating a lot of different stuff. And, of course, we will be happy to say that we've had our daily dose of the Groz. And, of course, we'll do it again tomorrow.
Sounds great, John. Thank you.
All righty. And so we'll come back tomorrow at 10 o'clock. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.